Welcome to 561 Music. I'm Hector. Ben's not with us today. Ben's family, his parents are in town, so he's doing the old parental entertaining, I guess. This week, so today on the podcast, you just got me, and that's fine. So today we have Anthony. Anthony, why don't you introduce yourself and give us a quick bio, if you will, about yourself.
All right. First off, thanks for having me, Hector.
Yeah, absolutely.
Big shout out to Ricky for getting me linked up to you as well. I come from like Hampton Roads area of Virginia. It's a smaller area. You might like think of it more as near Virginia Beach. My mom's family is, originally from New York, and my dad's family is originally from West Germany. So, I've seen a lot of different things growing up and got to experience a lot of different tastes of life. And Newport News and Hampton Roads, the area I'm in, has everything from country to Caribbean folks to a big Greek population. So there's a lot of festivals and stuff that happen, even though it's not a huge area that's known for being the most bumping music area. We've had a lot of people that are really invested in the cultural aspect of music, whether it be blues or maintaining traditions that have been there a long time. So
awesome.
I grew up in that. And then I got exposed to kind of reggae when I was, my dad lived overseas for a long time. So lived in Germany and then went to England. So he was exposed to reggae music. And even though he wasn't super huge into it, stuff like The Police, The Wailers, Steel Pulse, the big ones made it across my plate at a young age. So even if my parents weren't trying to show me that, they did. And so I heard like Midnight and Capleton when I got older, and that completely changed my view of what reggae was and what a live show for reggae music could be. And after that, I kind of invested in instruments and really got into guitar with some of my early friends, Mario, guys that don't play music too much live anymore, but were a big impact on me. And then that kind of like led me into, jazz and stuff like that. So I would say my formative years, like 16 through 25, I like had like a weird thing with like flamenco music, jazz and reggae. And that kind of became whatever I tried to put out in this project.
Yeah.
Playing heavy metal because you had to, if you were a young lad in like Virginia Beach, Norfolk area, everyone was playing hardcore. So even if you didn't come from that, that's the only people that were looking for guitar players. So I did a couple of years too.
Nice. So it's been a while since you've played down in South Florida, right?
I did the Reggae the Rock last year. I'm doing that this year on Sunday. I make my way down there when I can. Big shout to Reggae Lou and the Kind Buds. Last time I was there, they had me down there for two nights. There was always look out for the guys from Virginia and North Carolina.
Nice.
So I would say maybe like twice a year. I like to go like in spring when it's still chilly in Virginia, and then right when it starts to get cold in Virginia again in the fall, I make my way back to Florida.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't do cold, man. That's why I'm down here. And that's why we'll leave here. you were playing in a metal band for a little bit.
Yeah, I was a guitar player and screamer.
Nice. And so what would you say? I mean, I know you talked a little bit about, the reggae influences and how you were introduced to that stuff, but what would you say was like your big, your big catalyst that made you move from the metal to the reggae? Is it just, did you just feel the music more, or how did that all?
I think different kinds of reggae, like everybody else, I was exposed to the Wailers and like the Police first and Sublime. So I didn't know that a lot of that's Bunny Wailer influence and stuff like that till I got older. I think what happened was in college, I had a buddy who also played metal, who was really into reggae as well, and knew that I dabbled in reggae and like Steel Pulse. I like more older, like not even old, but like I like 70s roots was like kind of what I liked the most. And then he got me and he was like, look, man, I know you like metal too. You got to check out this guy, Capleton. And so we went and saw him live at the Norva, and it was the craziest show I've ever seen of any reggae artist or any kind of music. Bouncing around speakers, there was like a lot of spirituality and yet also a lot of like oomph. It wasn't laid back. It was like completely opposite of what I thought a reggae show was. And so that was the first time where I was like, okay, this is something different. And United Souls from my area, they're from like Newport News, and they've been around for decades. They're like an institution, got family members in the band, and they used to just hand me the mic, and it was a very dance hall atmosphere. So like you come up and you either hit or you don't. sink or swim.
Trial by fire, baby. So did you have any kind of, you know, when you started picking up the guitar and stuff like that, did you take any kind of formal lessons or anything, or you just kind of did your own thing?
Oh, like I my brag is that I haven't had any formal lessons, but, and the irony is I teach them. So, but I have a lot of good people along the way. I can't take like credit. Like it just popped out in my head.
Sure.
Like with anything else, there's different teachers. So musically, and early on, I had friends that I would play guitar with, like my buddies Mario. They were involved in metal with me as well in the area, hardcore, whatever you want to call it at that time. I think you find people that it's accidents. I always talk about like, oh, people have a musical journey, but the best part's accidents. My friend had to play drums to get into like a jazz class or something, need someone to practice with him. And I was okay at guitar at the time. I couldn't read sheet music or anything like that. And I had to learn this to help him kind of do his jazz thing. And he taught me so much about music that it just I got interested in jazz too. And he found Blues and Roots by Charles Mingus and Freddie Hubbard's Red Clay, big up John Gimble, my old keyboardist. And he was the guy that was like, yo, I found these in a yard sale. And like, we knew the artist's names. We really know the music. And that took us down the rabbit hole of jazz music and that it wasn't just some foo-foo frilly nonsense, that there was some in that music. And so I think those are the accidents that happen. People that do help you. Kevin Purnell was when I got into roots reggae music, I didn't know the difference. I thought Culture and Burning Spear was like the same dude because the voice was similar. So yeah. I listened to music but didn't know. And I'm like, oh, is this Culture? And I'm like, no, dog, it's Burning Spear. And after a while, like that was kind of who helped me figure out who's who in music so I could go down the lanes that I wanted to. My friend KJ in college showed me Capleton. And then I think like my mom's really good with finding songwriters. So even though reggae wasn't her main thing, Bob Marley was a big songwriter. And so to her, that was like something you should listen to for that aspect. So that was kind of like my turns to reggae. And yeah, I came home with Sublime in high school. My dad was like, that's not Wailers. And at the same time, that was what introduced me. So to judge what is and isn't reggae, we all do it sometimes.
But, I get it, man. We do, you know, you're talking about.
It's a part of the step that takes you there. You don't know, so it's all important.
Yeah, no, you're talking about like, you know, the happy accidents and stuff. And it's, you know, that's a huge part, I think, of a lot of musicians' journeys, you know, whether they know it or think it or not. You know, I am a bass player, but I was a rock bass player. And then I was in a Nirvana tribute band for a while. And then, you know, moved on to like an experimental rock band and stuff. And, you know, and it's funny, it's, you know, when you say the accidents, like I met somebody and then that led me to a different band. And then I met somebody in that band that led me to a different band. And now I play upright bass in a bluegrass, punk folk, you know, rockabilly style, band. And so yeah, it's you know, you would have told me 5 years ago I was gonna be playing like, you know, bluegrass, I would have thought you were crazy, but now I love playing it. It's fun. So yeah, I could see the musical journey. I got one more quick question for you. Give me your best thoughts on the current state of reggae. You know, like the path it's kind of heading down and stuff. You know, what are your thoughts on it?
Am I going to get canceled before I ever blow up?
Nah. It'll be fine.
So I think first off, like anything else, there's like a pop consumption thing that happens to all music styles. And I think that happened in the 80s. So the kind of suspectness or suspicions that a lot of old school reggae guys have at like, this is becoming bumper sticker, like theme park music, instead of what the message was supposed to be. I think there's a point to that. At the same time, I think that like, as anything else, if you make something awesome and amazing, it's gonna spread and it's gonna mix with other things. So I think there's always gonna be this fight between the old guys going, remember, we were the ones that started this for a reason, not just for the notes, but for a purpose to convey a message or give our people some hope or whatever it is. And then you have the new guys that go, yes, but your message does not exist unless it is repackaged for the modern generation and passed on. And I think that's always going to be a rift, especially in reggae, because you have that duality of we have to keep tradition going. There's a reason that this music is what it is. It's not supposed to look originally. The plan wasn't to have it get where it got. It was supposed to be a traditional cultural music.
Yeah. And
when you look at it, how it spreads, I see a lot of the arguments making sense on both sides. At the same time, old farts, you don't get anywhere without the young farts digging what you're doing. So if you're bitter at them for not carrying the torch, maybe it's because the conversation hasn't happened right. Or maybe it's because there hasn't been a way to try to explain that you're not the enemy. You're just trying to coach them in the right direction. So I think reggae is tough because it's, you have pictures of old pictures, not new pictures, black and white pictures of guys who had just gotten the Space Echo or just gotten whatever that gear was new at the time. So yeah, as much as to say this is steeped in tradition, these dudes were experimenting. And like, that's why the music holds up today. It's very unique sounding, and they were testing gear that hadn't been tested before. And so Casio keyboards and stuff like that. So I think that that's always going to be a pull in reggae music. I like the fact that reggae has spread, that people eventually, if you go deep enough, like I said, I've heard my criticisms of bands like Sublime and Slightly Stupid and stuff. And at the same time, that pulled a lot of my friends into the direction of Wailin Souls and Burning Spear. And so whoever opens the door is also part of the journey. And so I think that's the one thing that reggae will, it'll always be a bit of a like a grumbling, but once they can figure out how to reconcile that the new guys aren't trashing the old guys, we're just trying to do our own thing so we don't steal completely. You know what I'm saying? And also embrace it so we keep it going. And the old guys understand that, like, if you want it to pass on, you got to work with the new guys. So I think once that's reconciled, reggae will be a little bit more harmonious. But even at the same time, you're dealing with this problem because reggae is expanding. And like, the only reason you have the problem is a good reason.
You know? Yeah, I feel like it's definitely, you know, there was that big reggae rise in the 80s, like you said, but I feel like lately, the last few years, like there's just been another wave or another blow up of reggae. It's definitely been expanding rapidly lately. And it's cool. I mean, if you look at a lot of different genres and a lot of different music genres and things, you're going to find that there's a lot of that reggae roots in the music. You know, there just is. I mean, you know, there's a lot of stuff that people listen to these days that, that was influenced, whether in some large part or some small part, by a lot of the reggae early artists, you know? So yeah, it's cool that it's kind of blown up. So, listen, I know you got to get on the road because you got a show, down here at, Northwood Arts and Music Warehouse. That is, Monday, correct?
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. Big shout out to these guys. 'Cause Ricky hooked me up with you and this gig. So I got to shout out Ricky. Big up to Ricky, and we're going to be playing with The Dopes and Stony Vibes Music.
Nice.
It'll be a triple threat that night. And again, big shout to Ricky, who's always been really cool about trying to get me down to Florida. And,
and what time's the show on Monday?
Double check on that, but I want to say something probably like 7.
Gotcha.
Let me double check on those, but I'll make a post about that on the website.
Yeah, no worries, man. I'll double check all the information, and I'll definitely put the flyer and you know, in the show notes and stuff, and I'll put the all the information, doors and cost and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, man, we're looking forward to having you down here on Monday. I'm gonna try to get out there myself, and yeah, be safe on the road, man. Hope we'll see you in a couple of days.
Sounds good, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thanks for being on the show. Appreciate it.
Peace.